Welcome to Automates, the podcast that brings you musings from thought leaders and industry pioneers who are shaping the way we work, think, and succeed. Each episode is packed with insights, expert interviews, and practical tips that will inspire and empower you to take your business to the next level. So tune in, subscribe, and get ready to innovate with Automates. So, Patrick, welcome to Automates, our little podcast. Thank you for taking the time out to have a conversation with me.
Yeah, thank you, Ben. I appreciate it. Nice to be here.
No, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. So we've got a whole bunch of things that we want to talk about during the course of the next 45 minutes or so. But as always with all of these things, I mean, I've known you. I was trying to work out when I first met you, and I think it was like 2013, 2014 an ElterCon. I can't remember which ElterCon, where it was in the US, but I met you then. So I've known you for a long time. I know what you do, and I know that you've had a bit of a journey over the last few years in terms of where you are now, moving out of a law firm into what you're doing. So why don't you tell the audience who you are, and we'll then see where we get to.
Yeah. I think you're right around timing. I was thinking the same thing. I was going to try to figure it out by searching email or something. But it seems like we could just divide everything into pre and post pandemic, right? I've known him since before the pandemic,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
More. Yeah. So my background, where do we start? How far do we go back? Professionally, I've always worked for law firms. I went to law school and became a lawyer. A while ago. I hate to think about the dates sometimes, but it's been crazy to think about that. But yes, I practiced for about 8 or 9 years. I did some litigation in New York, originally starting in my hometown in Syracuse, New York, for a couple of years, and then moved to New York City at the end of 98. So, and then practiced for a few more years until I got sort of tired of doing it. And I really became frustrated with the practice. And of course, again, I guess I'll mention some dates because it puts it in context, right? With all the rapid technological advances that we have now, when I talk about some of the good old days, so to speak, it's like you have to remember where we were in terms of technology, right? I mean, internets were barely there. DMSs, not everybody had them, et cetera, all the rest of it. But in, it was 2005, actually, when I switched from practicing into knowledge management and innovation and technology. So it's 20 years this year. So
was it called innovation in 2005?
That feels
like a post-pandemic kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it was either post-pandemic. Definitely, it's accelerated, right? Mm. But I think pre-pandemic, there was a little bit of the innovation title being thrown around. I think Ted Theodoropoulos did an analysis of how many innovation titles there were at, I don't know what dates he did it, but it was a massive increase of people with innovation titles at law firms.
Yeah, definitely.
Chief Innovation Officer, which was my last title at my last law firm job at Jackson Lewis. By that time it became pretty common, I would say, although it's not pervasive yet. And then the combination of knowledge management and innovation, CKINO, there's a few folks out there that do that. And that had always been effectively, if not title-wise, my role since 2005, doing KM innovation technology. And then, especially the early years and my first job, switching from practicing to knowledge management at a firm called Gibbons Del Deo at the time, it was sort of I always call it the everything department back then, because nobody was doing this type of thing, right? The idea of someone outside of the IT department doing anything related to what we might call IT, but really software and software tools, really, when you think about it. And of course, all of the soft aspects of KM, building community, collaboration, innovation, all these things. it was really the everything. So not only did I, you know, start KM, but I also was on the e-discovery task force. I managed the library, the researchers, and worked very, very closely with technology, the actual technology department that was doing what I consider to be actual technology, you know, networking and telephony and all that hardcore stuff. But then also working with the marketing department. I remember, you know, our marketing department at the time didn't know what LinkedIn was. And I'm like, we should probably get on here because it's going to be very, very important. And those were early days for LinkedIn. But yeah, it's been a long time. And but anyway, to fast forward my sort of history, I did, you know, knowledge management, innovation roles at other firms, Debevoise and Plimpton. After that, spent most of my time at Ogletree Deacons. I think about 8 years as the head of KM and innovation at Ogletree Deacons, where we did a lot of great fun things. That's probably where we met when I was there at Ogletree. And then my last law firm job, as I mentioned, was at Jackson Lewis, another employment firm. And started pre-pandemic and then left during the pandemic, which, of course, was always fun times. And then since then, I've started my own consultancy, advisory, and conference and other things going on, too. Maybe we'll talk about some of the new stuff as well.
You're a busy guy these days. I mean, that's the so I when I left sort of TR slash HiQ in 2021, I was stumbling around for a little while trying to work out what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I sort of thought long and hard about sort of the consultant, the role of the consultant, particularly an independent consultant here in the UK. And it's a little bit, it's a challenge to run something by yourself, for yourself, and remain independent of different vendors, partners, various other bits and pieces. You know, you've got to like keep the lights on. So I look at sort of the people I grew up with in legal and KM through my connections at Ilterin, like a vast majority of people like yourself are either consultants or have quite evolved into this innovation role or combined KM and innovation role. And I think it's, you describe it as a sort of the everything department. And I think, you know, I think it still is the everything department, the department that IT don't want. I mean, you talked about the hardcore stuff, so the telephony, the tier one systems, email, all that sort of stuff. You know, yeah. I always find like the KM team get to experiment a bit more, and I think that's something that's come through as part of the rise of the whole AI stuff at the moment, sort of that experimentation, that mindset, but importantly probably that underpinning of everything on data and knowledge. You know, your AI tools are only as good as the knowledge that you're sort of feeding into it, the outputs and everything else. So how do you, I've lasted like 5 minutes before talking about AI, which I didn't mean to do, but you know, it's such a big part of today's knowledge management sort of landscape and innovation landscape. It's very hard to escape it. Do you find yourself sort of consulting against it? How do you keep up with the times, with everything changing so rapidly? As an independent consultant, what are you seeing some of the key trends that are coming out in 2025 that will influence people in 2026 and beyond?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I'm glad you said AI tools instead of just AI, right? Because that is something that I am consciously aware of. Because, you know, there's definitely some hype around AI, and there's definitely some worthy hype, right? There's some great tools out there. I know you've talked with a number of your podcast guests about a lot of them. I use lots of them as well. But, you know, something that I keep coming back to, and you sort of alluded to it just now as well, is it's really about solving problems. And at the end of the day, a lot of the problems haven't changed. The tools have changed. And that's one of the things I keep coming back to is this, I wouldn't say it's a mantra. I have some mantras that I sort of live by, but it's sort of this, you know, same problems, new tools. And I keep seeing that again and again when I'm having conversations with people. The conversation starts with, we need AI, right? We need, most people focus on the tool. And quite frankly, I see that a lot, even among our peers in this industry, you know, because you get caught up, because it is cool, right? It, AI, whatever we're calling AI today. It is cool and it's fascinating. And every day, every week, usually, some new tool or feature of a tool comes out and it blows your mind, right? It's like, how is it doing that? I can't believe it. Just within the last couple of years since the release of ChatGPT. But ultimately, what it comes down to is, you know, what problems are we trying to solve? And I know when someone articulates that, it's like, oh yes, of course, that old concept, but you forgot about it because this is really what it's all about. You know, having a general purpose generative AI tool can be very, very useful. I use them every day, and there's a few different ones I use every day. But I'm using them to accomplish certain goals, right? Whether that's helping me write or brainstorm or whatever it is. The goal is to get the output, right? It's not to do work with the tool. Of course, there are some people that is their goal, to refine and build and refine and make them better and all that. Those are computer scientists. Those are true AI experts, right? We, most of the people who we interact with, are consumers of the tools. Yeah. We buy hammers at Home Depot because we have to drive nails into walls rather than, you know, design hammers, right? It's the old, customers don't want to buy a drill. They want a 3/4-inch hole, right? The Black and Decker quote. I think it was Black and Decker. Anyway,
I think
focusing on really what we're trying to do at the end of the day. And it, quite, you know, it's exhausting to hear so much about the tools so often and to hear a lot of people, you know, just skip the focus on what are we actually trying to do. So I think that's very, very important in our day and age.
Yeah, 100%. It's almost going back to the hard yards. I mean, I talked to Alex Smith from iManage. I talked to sort of everyone that's been in the industry for a long time, and it's whether they call it that or not, it's go back to the problems, understand the journey people need to go through, what are the steps, what's the process, what does that look like? Do you think that the rise, these sort of digital assistants, these tools, these AI sort of capabilities, I think there's something that I've been thinking about a lot, which is the ease of use is just there. It's available. I can start typing stuff. I can get some feedback. I can refine it. I can go through that process. Anyone can use these tools. How do you feel about the accessibility of that kind of assistant, but the challenge around the modality of that? And then that outcome, so you've asked it to review a contract, or you've asked it to extract terms from a contract, or you've asked it to go off and provide some advice based on certain criteria. The history of that and the knowledge of that is in your little chat interface. I can go back and I can look at previous questions. Do you think that we're creating sort of collections of quite more silos of information, sort of isolated, so where we're leveraging these tools to generate knowledge and output, typically they're in CSV format, or they're in an output for that single thing. Do you think that over time we're going to find that actually those models and the modality of that kind of use will change? If that makes sense?
Yeah, I do. And it's funny. I think you can see some of the future in the past, right? And in the present. You know, I was recently, one of my, you know, connections recently, we were talking about document management and how do we deal with document management? And how do we deal with, you know, enterprise search, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, again, the goal is not to deal with those things. It is to get the outcome, the benefits of setting those things up correctly and tagging and managing and manipulating the data appropriately. so that the lawyers or others can use that data effectively, right? Not reinvent the wheel, not start from scratch, et cetera, all the goals of knowledge management that we talk about. But it's interesting because what I've started to see is a recreation. I was looking at one application that someone was using, and they were very proud to show me, oh, this does this, and it can reach into the DMS, and it can really do a great job of searching and extracting. And here I can use filters to filter down to the appropriate content that I'm really looking for. And I'm thinking, multiple thoughts at the same time. First of all, we all experience this exact experience when we use Amazon, right? Every single day, right? Most people use Amazon. But also, I was reminded of one of the first enterprise search systems that we launched when I was at Ogletree Deacons. So it was probably like 2012 or something like that. And it had all of these features that this person was showing me in this state-of-the-art tool that they were very proud of. But quite frankly, it didn't have all of them because the system we had more features. Not only this system was limited to document searching. I'm like, oh, that's cool. How do you find your experts? How do you find the people with the most experience on the topics that are related to the search that you're doing? Because we had this ability, back in the day, and lots of firms have systems like that already. But they're like, oh, we can't really do that in this. We'd have to go search something else. And I'm like, okay, interesting. What about your matters and things like that? Oh, well, that would be a different database. To your point, these are silos. Yeah. It's almost like we're re-siloing some things. And in the past, we had a little bit more ability to do a single search, right? We had the concept of the single search box that we used to talk about. But if you wanted to focus on looking for documents or looking for people or looking for whatever it is, you could do that as well. Again, the same way we do with an Amazon.com or something like that. So, the more things change, the more they stay the same, or maybe vice versa. But it's interesting to see. Now, clearly, some of the technology behind that is superior, right? So you might get more accurate results, which is a good thing, right? But another point you made earlier is about the data, right? If an organization, firm, in-house or otherwise, doesn't have its data accessible and clean, again, garbage in, garbage out, still applies to AI tools, right? And arguably, it can get worse faster, that type of thing, right? In other words, the better tools expose the bad stuff better, right? So unless you have, again, garbage in, garbage out, unless you have your house in order, you're exponentially exposing either good or bad content. And that can be a really positive thing or a really negative thing. So I think we're in an interesting time when it comes to the power of the technology that we're using.
Yeah, I was chatting to somebody a couple of weeks ago, and it's sort of the idea that generative AI has picked up within legal, because predominantly we are talking language, contracts, language, long, short, otherwise, doesn't matter. There is a whole bunch of words that get produced as an output. And I think that the underlying data in those structured or unstructured documents, it's really hard. And we in the last 2 days, I've spoken to two prospects about that exact challenge. How do we fix our data so that we can then, like everyone else, use these future-proof, these amazing tools with the transformative power and everything else? But we know that we're not there. We've got to do some groundwork to make sure that this is going to be the best thing that we can do to reduce risk, to increase standardization, to do those kind of things. I think it's going to be interesting. I mean, every now and again, I have these thoughts that sort of the industry is already, everyone's already deployed AI. Everyone's already there. Everyone's already winning. And it's like, I forget that we're just at the beginning. It feels like with all of the news and all of the change and some of the hype, but sort of the improvements that every model gets, like comes out every 3 months, 4 months, whatever, across the board. it feels like change is happening so quickly that we must already be there yet. But we've only taken the first few steps, I believe, for many law firms. So, you know, it's an interesting world. So question about your consulting, sort of your consulting business. When it isn't focused on bad data and AI, what other topics and trends are you seeing sort of firms or in-house teams talking about that sort of might be interesting, might create some trends or themes that you're seeing over the next sort of 12, 18 months?
Yeah. Well, you know, what a lot of people don't know about my consulting work is that I do work for sort of the three main contingents within our world, right? Of course, my background, having worked at law firms forever, and knowledge management, innovation, technology in law firms, that's one of the groups that I work for, which I enjoy very much, of course, and have a lot of experience in that. But also in-house legal departments. I find it fascinating to work with in-house legal departments. And the third one being legal tech companies. But let me talk about in-house legal for a minute. What I love about working for in-house legal departments is they have wildly different motivations than law firms, right? And you know, it's obvious on its face, right? Law firms are businesses that still primarily make their revenue from billing hours to clients, right? That's the widget that they sell. And unless they change or alter their business model and charge other than by the billable hour, which of course many of them do, few do that exclusively, but most do that at least when the client wants it, right? On a project basis or some other fee arrangement other than hourly. But you know, in-house legal departments, they are 100% interested in being efficient and taking advantage of all the things that we know and love about knowledge management and innovation. There is no competing interest like the billable hour requirement, right? In-house lawyers don't, I haven't met any that have a billable hour requirement. They're just trying to get the work done, you know, and, you know, work with a few. And, you know, a typical use case, of course, would be, you know, we're drowning in the thousands of contracts that we have to review on a annual basis, or sometimes more than that. How do we do that more efficiently, more accurately? How do we manage that contract lifecycle? And of course, that's a very common use case within in-house. But there's all types of use cases. Litigation is another one, of course. How do we handle the litigation that we're doing in-house, and how do we manage it when we farm it out to law firms? How do we do these things effectively? A lot of it's about management, project management, et cetera. And as I mentioned, the principles, the goals of knowledge management and innovation, doing things better, stronger, faster, as I like to say, dating myself with a $6 million man reference there. the goal is to do it that way. And in-house legal departments don't have a disincentive to be less efficient, right? They absolutely want to be more efficient. Law firms, you know, of course, most lawyers are ethical and they are going to be efficient. But if, you know, if I tell you I can do 8 hours of work in 10 minutes using some new tool, then if you've got plenty of work to do after that previous 8 hours of work in 10 minutes, then you're happy to do it. But if you don't have that much work on the shelf ready to go, how do you make up for the 7 hours and 50 minutes that you just took away from my billable hour requirement, which makes a lot of money for the firm? Obviously, firms have to figure that out going forward. Anyway, those are two of the groups. And then the other group that I really love working with are legal tech companies. I've always been involved, even when I was at law firms, always been very closely involved with legal tech, whether it was, you know, intranets, DMS, and all the other types of legal tech that came down the road. I was always very interested in optimizing it, right? Finding the right tool for the job, getting at the cutting edge of of, you know, how can we help our lawyers do it better, stronger, faster? And now that I'm on my own, you know, I can do that in more than just a sort of partnership way between the law firm and the legal tech company. And now for years, I've invested and advised various legal technology companies. I find it fascinating because the perspective that I had at the law firms for many, many years is really, really instructive to those companies. Obviously, those companies are trying to sell into law firms and in-house legal departments. I used to be a big customer of those things, assessing them very closely and making decisions about which of them to acquire. So I kind of have I have some insight into what law firms and in-house legal departments are looking for from those providers. So that 360 view of our industry really keeps me very interested and very curious, and keeps me going when it comes to doing all this stuff. So I really enjoy it. It's a great thing to do.
Aside from the productivity and efficiency and the focus around that, what are the things that you're seeing? I spent a lot of time previous life at HiQ. Before that, I was inside a law firm, sort of part project manager, part business analyst, part fixer. You know, I spent a lot of time thinking about, okay, well, if we put this in the hands of a lawyer, okay, there's a whole bunch of contributing factors as to whether or not they're going to use it in terms of the technology. You've got things like user experience. You've got things like, is it integrated into the underlying data source that you need to surface? So you tying these things together. I think that one of the big things that I've sort of seen and thought about, but I've not seen a lot of organizations do really well, is that kind of change management side of things. There was a quote, like, and I used it in a slide and I probably stole it and I probably got it wrong, but, you know, 80% of legal tech projects is actually change management, and 20% is the commoditized tech that you've bought to give to your lawyers. You know, that's not necessarily true, but is there sort of an understated impact of not getting that kind of change right? And are we putting too much change in a lawyer's hands at the moment, with kind of things having, you know, you talk about working with legal tech providers. If you cast your mind back to when you first started at Ogletree, you'd probably look at the market and go, it's 250 legal tech providers, maybe 500 if you're thinking outside of KM&I type of thing. Now there's like 3,000, 4,000 and growing.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Solving for the same, if not similar, problems. And I think that there's that sort of, it's almost like there's an impact of putting too much too quickly in the hands of lawyers from a change perspective. But I think there's also sort of it's very hard to monitor and think about value. So I don't know if you've got any thoughts around sort of the whole change management piece. And I'm not just thinking like a little quick reference guide that you give to a lawyer. There's the whole thing that goes around it, and particularly with AI now, you know, sort of, yeah. You got any thoughts around that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Your point about the numbers, right, is just very, very telling. I guess it was spring of 23. So November 22 is when ChatGPT came out, right? And I remember thinking at the time, okay, this is impressive. And right away, we're starting to hear about the application of this to the legal profession. Spring of 23, of course, it was the only thing people were talking about at Legal Week, right? And I was getting 3 calls a week from kids. And I say that because they're, you know, they're fresh out of college. Some of them had been recently let go from some of the big tech firms like Google and Amazon, et cetera. You know, you might not remember, but there was a big layoff at that time. I'm thinking this confluence of events, right? The high tech, this release of this brand new technology, not the release, but the general knowledge about it now, because it was out there before. I remember it was probably years ago, years before ChatGPT came out. I think it was GPT 2.0. Rudy DeFelice emailed me about this, and he's like, "Hey, check this out." I'm like, "Wow, it's amazing." I'm like, I had to look back and see that he had told me about it, you know, months and years before it came out. Anyway, it became popular around that time. And this confluence of people losing their job and the and this influx of new technology, I'm like, this is going to spike, as you suggested, right? All of a sudden, there's brand new companies out there, and they're all trying to do the same thing, and they don't have the focus because most of them don't have any experience in the legal world. And my, I wouldn't say advice, but one of the things I was saying to most of these people who were calling me was, prepare yourself for the sales cycle and the adoption cycle, to your point, of the legal industry. It is slow and it's hard to do, right? Especially if you don't have any experience in it, it's going to be a shock to your system. And I know a lot of those companies aren't around anymore. They've pivoted, they're doing something else, which is understandable. And over the months and years, I've come to think, and I just wrote an article about this on LinkedIn, the gist of it is, it's never been easier to do things, but it's never been harder to do things well, right? Because we have these technologies. Anybody can spin up a newsletter because it's, you know, you can have ChatGPT or whatever your AI tool that you like, write it for you, research it, update it weekly, and effectively write it. Maybe you review it and maybe edit it a little bit, and boom, there's your email newsletter. And some of it's good, some of it's bad. But it's, so it's never been easier to do that, but it's never been harder to do it well. One of your previous guests, I think Peter Duffy, I think, he was talking about his newsletter and how, you know, it's very difficult to do that well and to actually use your mind rather than use the technology tools to put out quality work. And the same goes for, and I know we're talking about change management law firms, and I am going to get there, but the same goes for a lot of what I do, right? My conference, right? It's relatively easy to spin up a conference these days, right? You find a location, there's software out there that helps you manage it and schedule it. But to do a good conference is, I didn't realize it at the time, I should have, because I've been doing it so long, how hard it is to do everything, right? But the same does go for what you're talking about within law firms, you know, getting people to adopt the new technology. And that's something, the change management aspect is something that people talk about a lot. And I think it's important to remember that there's a step or multiple steps, but I think one important step even before adoption, and it is awareness, right? You can't adopt something if you're not aware of it. And I learned that the hard way back in the day when I was working at law firms, and I experience it now, because even back in the day, I thought to myself, I realized attention is one of the most valuable things, right? I mean, how many years ago were we all worried about, you know, information overload? We don't even say that anymore, right? Remember information overload and trying to get to inbox zero and all this. And we were constantly inundated with information. That was back, I mean, how many, a couple of decades ago, I was complaining about that. Now it's like, you know, we're ingesting, or at least what's thrown at us is 10, 50, 100 times more easily, I think.
At least, yeah, 100%. I mean,
it's crazy. So how do you get people aware of something, even if you're just talking about in your work environment, when there are busy lawyers and busy legal professionals doing their work and trying to get their work done, they don't have time to learn something new a lot of times, right? How do you even make them aware that there's something that can help them if they would adopt it, right? And then sort of learn it, right? Et cetera. So yeah, I think people skip to the adoption step. It's implied that they have to be aware to adopt, but to make people aware is very, very important, I think.
I've never really thought about it that, because, you know, it's sort of implicit in the fact that you're giving them something, but once you've given it, it's like that's the transaction, but actually there's the lead up to the transaction and everything else.
I gotta say, to your point, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I was, when I was at law firms, you know, lawyers would come to us and say, hey, you know, I got this thing, it's important, da, 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 whatever, or the client has asked about this thing. I'm like, oh yeah, that's XYZ product. And they say, why didn't you tell me we had this? I spent so many hours doing this, that, and the other. I'm like, and of course you have to kind of bite your tongue. You know, you don't want to, you know, piss anyone off, but yeah, we told you a bunch of times about this, you know, and quite frankly, one of the things I would do when it was a really important launch of a tool or whatever it was, I know that attention is the most important thing, right? It's very, very scarce and very valuable. So often what I would do is instead of sending out the notification myself, whatever type of notification it was, and we got creative with some of the stuff, but if we had to do it by email, for example, I would ask someone who is much more influential than I was at that firm to do to send it out. If I get the managing partner to do it, you got to be sparing with that because the managing partner's time is valuable as well, of course. And, you know, if you can get the managing partner to send your message out, the chances of that being read and absorbed is, you know, 100 times greater than CKO, even though I'm a big, important CKO, right? So you got to be tactical. You got to be strategic and tactical about that, or else you're going to be wondering why people don't adopt. And then when people come to you and say, why didn't you tell me about this? What are you going to say? I told you so. You know, that's not a good strategy. It's difficult. It's difficult.
So you said earlier that it was really easy to set up an event. So Patrick, how easy is it to set up an event? And tell me about KMNI in October in New York.
Yeah. Well, it's easy to do some of the things related to an event, right? You know, my history there, of course, is I've been involved with lots of different organizations, of course, ARC-KM and all the rest of it. And, you know, for I think it was 8 years, 7 or 8 years, Joshua Fireman, our friend, and I, we co-hosted that ARC-KM conference that Kevin Klein produced. The funny thing is he started producing that, coincidentally, the same year I got into knowledge management. And that was my first conference in 2005. And it grew since then. But, you know, the same with lots of other tools and technologies, right? Now there's, you know, software that you can sign up for. It's relatively inexpensive and it can manage the website and the signups and the payments and scheduling and all of that stuff. It's not easy, but it's a heck of a lot easier than it ever was. And having done the content part of conferences for so long, right, whether it was ARC or ILTA on the Knowledge Management Steering Committee and various other groups, you know, the behind the scenes stuff, that the coordination, the venue, the contracts, the logistics, you name it, right? And, you know, my conference, KMNI, is relatively small. It's a niche event, you know, a couple hundred people. You think of something like an ILTA, right? That's a couple thousand people and multiple stages and all the rest of it. We all know what ILTA is about. That's not easy to do, but you know, you can spin up a conference relatively easily, but you know, now you got to start thinking about content and who are the right speakers. And we know there's so many great speakers out there. I know you go to a lot of conferences. So do I. But then, you know, people start complaining about things like speaker fatigue. I'm starting to see the same people talking at the same conference at these conferences every couple of weeks. And they're great speakers. That's why they're on stage. But they're kind of saying the same thing. Aren't there fresh new voices out there? So that's one of the things we focus on at KMNI is actually Tanisha Little came up with this. She's one of our advisors. And when we were talking about this speaker fatigue concept, she's like, yeah, we need both. We need like seasoned people who are great. And we need the new people who are up and coming and doing also doing great stuff and sharing what they're doing. So she said, yeah, we need tried and true and fresh and new. So it's this combination. And I'm like, that's it. That's one of our slogans.
I love Tanisha. She's great. I love Tanisha. But like, tried and true and fresh and new, that's a slogan for some kind of fabric softener for washing machines. It sounds awesome. Yeah. It sounds awesome. So somebody would have paid like $2.5 million just for that tagline.
And it was just an off the cuff remark that she came up with. And yeah, she's brilliant. And we have a lot of other great advisors on the KMNI advisory board. Evan Shankman, Ali Shahidi, Stephanie Gudos, of course, Tanisha. And cool. and our newest one is Kate Kane. Kate is joining us on the advisory this year as well. So we're really happy to have a great crew to help us out with it. And that's another part of it, right? Yeah, could I come up with speak? I know lots of people. I can come up with various speakers and topics. I've been doing this for a long time. But we need different perspectives, right? Larger firms, you know, smaller firms, et cetera, et cetera. People who are, you know, more sort of tech focused, people who are more, you know, change management focused, whatever it is, having that diversity of perspective is really, really important. So, you know, coordinating that, it's a lot of fun. I love it. But, you know, again, easy to do it, but harder than ever to do it well. And having these folks help out along the way makes it a lot easier and a lot better. So I'm
we're super looking forward to it. So we can't wait to come and join in, contribute, add some wit and charm, but not by me. That'd be somebody else providing the wit and the charm. But I think, you know, what you've just talked about is you've just talked about surrounding yourself with a group of like-minded, sensible people that can help make the thing that you're creating better. But that leads me to think about the nature of the KM / innovation community that's grown over the years. And I think, you know, I've said this before on the podcast, but to different people, and I say it all the time, you know, one of the things that keeps me going in legal and focused in around what we do, it's the people, really. The people, their backgrounds, how they work. You know, it's such a great community of smart, intelligent, quite clever people that, you know, it keeps you coming back for more. And I think if you've put that as a foundational layer around what your conference looks like, then it's only going to be better.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. It's funny you should say that because I literally just posted a video that essentially says just that. It's all about the community, you know, and it's true, right? Everyone's so generous and they share so much. You know, they're taking time out of their busy and busier everyday schedules, right? These folks are just, when's the last time you talked to anyone in our community and they're like, yeah, things are good. It's just an even keel, even flow. No, everything is like, oh my God, it's so busy. You know, trying to keep our head above water just on the AI stuff or whatever it is. So to take time out of their busy schedules and increasingly busy schedules to you know, just share what they think about some of this stuff, submit ideas for speaking, talk about who should be there, share about the new folks who they want to suggest to speak, that type of thing. Really, really generous folks. And, you know, they're sharing a lot of what they're doing. It's probably the thing I love most about what we do. And that's why, you know, my favorite thing to do is the conference stuff, because bringing people together, sharing information really, really is a lot of fun. And it's always learning something, right? From just about everybody.
I've been very successful at this, but I surround myself with smart people, smarter than me, and it's not hard. So I'm a low bar, so I'm constantly learning and constantly sat there thinking. But you know, if I were to open up my WhatsApp at the moment, I've got my kids, my wife, a couple of family members, but then it's work. It's not work people as in colleagues. It's industry people that I'm bouncing ideas from, or I'm saying, you go to this conference, or are you doing that, or what are you hearing about this? And you know, I think it's just that sort of that nature of giving is so, it's intrinsic in this particular little niche, and creating a conference around the Cayman I world where it is that kind of sharing mentality is
yeah, if you think about it, collaboration is one of the core, you know, principles of knowledge management, right? Yeah. And that's not just cooperation. Collaboration is truly working together toward a common goal, right? And even though it's, you know, that could be considered maybe inter-firm or inter-organization, you know, knowledge management, collaboration, whatever it is, I think to get into this world, to decide to get into KM and innovation in legal or anywhere else, you have to have that sort of spirit of sharing, right? Knowledge sharing. Again, we go back to some of these principles, right, of knowledge management, irrespective of the level of technology and the shiny new objects. Collaboration, sharing information, et cetera, are all sort of fundamental, I think, ingrained things. So it attracts those types of people. And those types of people are fun and interesting to be around. And they tend
good
to be
humans. Good humans, as I describe them. I also call them other things, but that's for later on in the evening. But, you know, that's how it works.
And most people are very humble, like yourself, too. By the way, you're a little smarter than you put on.
Well, I listen well. I sort of absorb. I'm getting smarter by the day. That's it. But you know, start low bar. Patrick, thank you very much for taking the time. I mean, I know that we had a couple of other things that we might want to talk about, but I know that we're at the top of the hour. If there's anything that you wanted to raise or flag before we knock off and say goodbye, one last little snippet for the team automates, as in the wide population that listens to this.
Yeah, well, I will tell you that you know, talking about great people and trying to make it easier to do things, so actually I haven't told, I don't think, anyone beyond a very small group of people about this yet. So there's some news about the KM&I conference, and it has to do with something I mentioned before. Kevin Kline is joining the KM&I conference. So, you know, he's, of course, with Inside Practice, and he had previously been with the ARC Group, again, mm-hmm. that organization that started the KM sort of movement in legal back 20 years ago. He and I have been friends since then and worked together closely on various things. I finally convinced him, hey, come on, let's work together on some of this stuff officially. So he's joining not only the KM&I conference as the head of content and programming, but he and I are also partnering on a new venture, which is called Legal Tech Connect. So it's I won't say too much about it because you're going to start to see a lot about it in the press, and there'll be a press release about it. Probably by the time this comes out, the press release will be out as well. But Legal Tech Connect is going to be another, it's all about connecting people together, right, in this organization through events and various products and things like that. We're really excited about it. Can't say too much about it, but so I'm really super excited to work with Kevin in an official capacity. Everyone knows him and loves him. He's been the powerhouse behind most of the KM and innovation conferences that have been great ones for many, many years. So you heard it here first. You've broken some news here, Ben.
Awesome. Exclusive.
Yeah. It's an exclusive.
Yeah, no, that's great. Well, congratulations. I mean, I think that's the thing. There's a bunch of people over the years that I've either worked with, worked for, or worked on behalf of as a sort of client-vendor kind of arrangement. You know, there's probably a small handful that if I was going to start from scratch and do something different, I would want. There's a couple of people that I would go, right, come on, let's go and do something interesting together. Because, you know, you when you find the right sort of mix of people, it just, you know it's going to only add to the outcome and it's only going to improve things. So congratulations. That's awesome.
Yeah, we're super excited. We worked together for so many years back to the ARC days, and we always loved to work together. And we always used to say, yeah, we should do this ourselves, you know, that type of thing. So finally, 10, 12 years later, we're going to do it. Yeah, super excited. He's the best. Everybody loves Kevin. And, you know, the programs he puts together are just, you know, peerless, you know. So having him on board is just going to bring us to the next level. So I'm psyched about it.
Perfect. I always end these little things with partly so that I know when I'm going to see you in human form next, as opposed to through some kind of video, which for me, I think is probably going to be ILTA unless you're over here during the summer. But where are you going? What's next on your agenda, your sort of events list? Where are people going to find you?
Yeah, I think it's going to be ILTA. Yeah. August, what is that? August, mid-August? I can't remember the date. But yeah, I'll definitely be in Washington for ILTA. I'm not sure I have any other travel plans. I know that Legal Tech Talk event, is that in June in the UK?
It's in June, June in London.
Yeah. I haven't been, but I guess this is the second year. It looks
It's the second year. I was chatting to somebody like you, so the CEO and founder of Legal Tech Talk. I was chatting to Bradley last week. Yeah, it's starting to get real and busy now. So that's going to be an interesting event. And I think it's got in terms of scale, it's not quite ILTA size, but it's not far off. It's going to 2,500 people, but just in 2 days. Yeah. It'd be interesting to see how that plays out.
That's actually kind of nice. I always thought ILTA was a little too long, right? By the last day of ILTA, it's like everybody's exhausted, right?
I'm always exhausted.
What Bradley and his team have done in just the second year, right? Really impressive. The other one out, not in the UK, but in Amsterdam, is Lexpo, which Rob Amirun's conference. Yeah. I went to that once, I think, in 2017. I spoke there. That's a fantastic event, too.
I was there in 2017. I was at that conference.
Yeah, yeah. That was great. I mean, boy, I was very impressed with that, and I'm sure it's gotten better since. That seems like forever ago. To say it was 2017 just sounds like a long
time. Is that pre-pandemic thing? You just don't think about things like that.
It was pre or post-pandemic, and it was pre.
Exactly.
But yeah, there's so many good events these days. Rob surely puts on a good event. I hope to get back there again to attend again. But definitely ILTA, another great event. I will definitely see you there.
Cool. Rock and roll. Patrick, thank you very much for your time. Always a pleasure to chat. Thank you for your insight and sharing and being an all-round awesome human. So thank you.
Well, thank you. I do appreciate the invitation. It's great, great chatting with you. I know I'll chat with you again soon.
Yeah, definitely. Catch you soon. Cheers, buddy. Bye.